Hey, it's Norm McIver, and you're listening to Tim and Graham on the 610 Podcast.
The end of the tunnel? That's the question that we'll be trying to answer on this episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast, the most irreverent senators podcast on the internet. Tim, after 2-0 victories over the Philadelphia Flyers and Montreal Canadiens, have we reached the light at the end of the tunnel?
It sounds like the intro to a self-help book, like, you know, 20 ways to a, you know, happier, healthier self. I don't know, something like that. End of the tunnel? I don't know. Maybe we're coming close to the end of the season.
There's still 8 games left.
Yeah. If the light of the tunnel includes putting together a ridiculous winning streak heading into the playoffs and then, you know, doing what Ottawa's done all season and just taking a nosedive after those games, especially if there's any sort of break whatsoever between the regular season and the playoffs, and this team might be in some trouble. So, you know, the skies may not be blue, but, you know, we're not getting full sun.
It looks like Brian Elliott's been anointed as the number one goalie.
We've been hearing Clouston talk all week. Been hearing everyone talk for the past 2 months now about how one goalie needs to step up and take charge, blah, blah, blah. But from the sounds of it and the way it's gone, it's a win and you're in situation and that's it. Why can't we all just call a spade a spade?
Have you heard what Tim Murray said on today's Hockey Central that was on the Fan 590 today?
Not directly from the radio, just from your mouth earlier. But please tell me.
Quote unquote, Doug McLean, former Columbus Blue Jackets general manager, said...
How could we ever forget he was involved with Columbus?
Because he reminds everybody all the time.
Jeez.
But he asked Tim Murray, what the hell have you done to Pascal Leclaire?
And?
Tim Murray replied with, it's been bad, Doug. Right off the bat, I agree. I think we're all to blame. Him, us, everybody. It's been terrible. It's been a terrible situation.
I'm actually a little bit surprised the Senators didn't take a page from the Habs book and maybe send Leclaire home for a few days. Get hockey off his mind, you know, kind of sink him to rock bottom. Well, not that he's not already there yet, but maybe he can realize he's there and then rebound. I don't know. That's one option. But how would you say the Senators have mishandled Pascal Leclaire?
I don't understand why he never was sent down for a conditioning stint after his injury to his face. The guy needs to play. He needs to face the puck. He needs repetitions to get better. He's not going to get better playing on the bench. And Brian Elliott was killing it. He wasn't going to get in during that huge, long winning streak.
Well, he hasn't got any better playing on the ice either.
No. The most productive thing he's done lately is like throw his blocker on the bench and kick the door. He looks bad. He does not look good.
No, he doesn't look like an NHL caliber goalie at this point. You can't even mistake him for one.
But at least Tim Murray admitted that the organization is like hasn't helped him out that much, though.
Yeah, I guess that's all behind the scenes stuff.
And they haven't really played well in front of him either in some of his like most recent starts, right?
Yeah, that's true. But you can also say the same for some of Elliott's starts too, right? But somehow, some way, Brian Elliott has found a way to get himself in the position to be the number one goalie going into the playoffs. Not that it took a whole hell of a lot, right? And on the heels of those two, you know, relatively impressive victories against Philadelphia and Montreal over the past 2 nights. You know, maybe things aren't as bad as they seem, or are they?
Maybe the team just has more confidence playing in front of Brian Elliott right now.
Yeah, of course. That's definitely possible. Maybe the whole team is, maybe we're focusing too much here on the goaltending being a direct result of the team's struggles, whereas it was actually just more of a cumulative team effort. Right. Even though we're not getting any of the big top six guys going on a massive goal scoring streak here. I mean, Alfie's been putting up his points, but they've been coming mostly from, you know, nice helpers and the odd goal here and there. And the team is playing as a collective. And maybe they just realized that as a whole, they needed to get their shit together after that. What was it? 1-7-1 before the 2 games the past 48 hours.
But we've talked about that before, where the team has to play as a collective to have any viable chance of success moving forward. Like, they're too streaky up front. You can't rely upon any of these guys. And they've demonstrated that, like, over their careers. You can't count on a guy like Kovalev to bring it every night. You sure as hell can't rely upon Mike Fisher to be a second-line center.
Our leading goal scorer is 22 goals.
And sad as it is, like, Daniel Alfredson's regressed.
Yeah, he has.
If you watch old highlights, he's not the same player as he used to be. He's still very, very good.
But I
don't know if he's good enough to carry this team anymore.
Someone's
probably going
to. Yeah, you're going to get jumped on for that one, I'll tell you right off the bat. But, you know, I understand where you're coming from. He's certainly regressed. But not to, like, you know, a Pascal Leclerc type regression. But he's certainly been scaled back a little bit. Think Jordan in the later years, but not with the White Sox. And you might get a little better vision of Alfie. I think he can still carry this team as a leader in the dressing room and the way he plays on the ice.
I just meant from a point production standpoint,
yeah,
though.
Exactly. But can you count on the guy to score, you know, 30 to 50 goals in a season anymore? Absolutely not.
I think he only has like 18 right now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he hasn't hit the 20-goal mark yet.
Yeah.
But there's no way he's going to do that. And when your leading goal scorer only has 22 goals, and I always thought that 20 goals in the NHL was kind of a benchmark for, you know, a guy who was offensively gifted, but, you know...
As a complimentary player. He's not a first-line player, though.
Yeah.
I think that's what we've learned.
Yeah, like the
as
secondary...
As the course of the season's gone on.
The secondary scoring kind of guy, you know, someone who you can put out there in the last 5 minutes of play and hope to get a goal somehow. Like a Cullen, right?
And he could foreseeably be out for the next, what, week, 2 weeks? Possibly the season?
Yeah, infinity for this year.
Depending on whether or not his ACL's been torn?
Here's one for you to chew on that a lot of people have. Right now, going into going into the playoffs against Pittsburgh, we had Danny Heatley. This year, instead of Heatley, we've got Andy Sutton. If Mahalik's out for the playoffs, that's it.
Imagine you drop that bomb on Senators fans, like before the whole Heatley trade request like broke out. Just said, you know what? At this time next year, you'll have made the playoffs, and the only healthy body you would have at the start of the playoffs in return or in exchange for Danny Heatley was Andy Sutton. You'd probably freak out.
Oh yeah, people would have an absolute field day. I mean, already, you know, the stage has been set for a Murray upheaval in Ottawa, right? You know, obviously we can get into that later in more detail. But I think what's important right now is talking about the way the Senators played in Montreal and Philadelphia. They certainly played a lot more of a physical game.
It looked like they go back to their forecheck, strong forecheck, created some turnovers, hard-hitting defense.
Yep. Puck possession. They were skating really hard.
They also got some bounces for the first time in a while, it seems. Like, that goal that Philadelphia may or may not have scored. The previous, like, six games, they weren't getting those bounces.
Be honest with me. Do you think that was in?
It's tough to tell from, like, a pixelated close-up of the goal line whether or not that puck was in. It kind of looked like it was in. But, I mean, how do you overturn that?
Yeah, like, you watch the replay, and it just makes sense that the puck is in the net, right? But you can never see that thin, thin, thin pixelated white line that separates the goal line from the puck. And I think that's what did them in. And thank goodness. Thank goodness for that referee. Thank goodness for Simone Gagné's. One guy who came around in the Philadelphia game, kind of had, you know, like a late season coming out party, was Anton Volchenkov. That was the most solid game I've seen him play since
before the
Olympic break. Do you have any thoughts on what he meant on the ice for the Senators?
I mean, saved us a goal.
Yeah, he did.
Bailed his goalie out. I think he made another sprawling like glove save at 1.2, didn't he?
Wasn't that in Montreal when he slid
across
the net?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But no, he's played relatively well the last few games. I know before that he was struggling, but the whole team was struggling. It's tough to single out individuals.
I can't even remember the last massive check Volchenkov threw. Like, I remember earlier in the season, you got the headman, Tavares, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
he rocked Carcillo.
And then he rocked Carcillo.
Yeah.
That was, I couldn't believe, it was the third angle they showed when they were showing the replay.
Such a dirty hit, though.
When he comes in so fast.
The league's trying to crack down on that. Can you believe the excuses that Carcillo's throwing out post-game?
Unbelievable. What a whiner.
I can kind of understand the Gagné one. Just because, he was turning his back. He got hit from behind.
End of the day, he did get hit from behind. Whether or not it was his fault or Volchenkov's fault, that's all up for debate. And I don't really give a fuddle-duddle one way or the other about that. But
the guy who fought Marian Gaborik is complaining.
Yep.
Awesome.
Carcillo took the moral high road.
What a good person.
Unbelievable. the brat. He's terrible. What do you think of that mustache? What images does that mustache conjure in your mind?
Glued on pubes.
It reminds me of someone who maybe operates a petting zoo or is maybe a Cub Scout leader or something. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah, it's just unbelievable that a guy like Carcillo, who lives and dies by that same sword, the same guy who has the audacity to get in a fight with Marion Gaborik because he claims Gaborik, you know, initiated it.
You pulled up the list of the guys who he's fought this year, and it isn't very honorable.
The only guy on that list who I would consider even a, you know, somewhat reputable heavyweight was Sean Thornton of the Bruins. He's fought Craig Revey a bunch of times this year. Steve Downey.
Bunch of lightweights.
Yeah. Who is this guy?
I don't know. He's not that tough.
No, he's not. And the way he was crying around on the ice afterwards, I thought he was going to actually burst into tears when he was staring at Volchenkov, trying to give him this awesome stare down at center ice. And it's like, you know, you're looking back at Carcillo.
At least Gagne tried to jump him.
Eyes are all glossed over, looking like a moron because he just got played.
Yeah.
But and I really liked Andy Sutton crushing him too.
After he hit Carlson.
Yep, which Brian Murray actually stepped up and said that he didn't have a problem with that because Carlson turned into it.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Gagne, right? But Gagne, I'll be completely honest with
you. We're a tough team. We're a tough team going forward.
We're so tough that Simone Gagne pounded Volchenkov.
We're playoff ready. Carlson's taking hits.
Hey, if at least that's a good sign, though. If Carlson could take a hit from Danny Carcillo.
Well, you better get used to it because you're going to be targeting that guy in the playoffs.
Well, that's okay. As long as he's playing with, quote, Mount Sutton back there, then we'll be okay.
Is that the new nickname from Andy Sutton? Oh,
that's the new Sun name. They got to come up with something else.
Everybody
for these
has
guys.
To have a nickname, though.
Oh, everyone's a friggin' landscape, the Ottawa Sun. Big Country and Mount. I'm just waiting for, like, Picturesque Horizon to be tagged to Carlson or something. Or maybe, like, the Swedish Sunset could be Alfie's nickname going forward. I don't know.
Weak.
Come on, Twilight.
That's weak. Twilight.
Shit. That's bad movie, good nickname.
Oh, man.
Well, you're the one who thinks Alfie's regressed, so...
Oh. Okay, so where do you want to go from here? Everybody at the Sun has to have a nickname for a guy, though.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Well, at least they were original, like Mr. Ottawa Senator competition.
Well, Big Country certainly has a big place in the hearts of the Ottawa ladies, apparently. Maybe that's just indicative of, you know, who was voting.
Are you saying the female populace who reads the Ottawa Sun
listen,
loves meatheads?
Listen, I don't want to get into this too much at all because this is neither the place nor time, but Nate Sager had more words about the CIS than the Sun had about healthcare in the U.S. on Monday after it got passed Sunday night. Unbelievable. And you know what? Maybe that's why that's why Gerkner won.
Oh, no.
And I'm sure Nate would love that. I wonder if he even noticed.
Oh, that's funny, though.
Do you have any more? Do you have any good nickname suggestions?
I wish they go to, like, I don't know, try something new. Get away from, like, yeah, just get away from the whole environment. Like,
how about drinks or something?
That's
something.
Like, alcoholic beverages would be good. Call, like, Kovalev, like, the White Russian or something.
I got one. Jared Cowan, Prairie Fire.
There you go.
Or Phillips, too, right? There you go. Pascal Leclerc could have been an orgasm.
Blowjob.
Who's B-52? There's no B-52 on the team, is there?
It's too bad we don't have Jager.
Jagerbomb. That would have been sweet. All right. Let's get away from the booze a little bit
here. You can't get out of booze and go straight into Buffalo. The two are synonymous. It doesn't even matter. It's perfect segue.
You got to be boozed up to be in Buffalo just to tolerate the city.
The city and the weather. There's the mediocrity of their sports franchises. What a shitty town.
The south side of that lake ain't too pretty, eh?
I think, I forget which publication it was, but one of the papers, I think, rated Buffalo as the most deserving of Stanley Cup because they've endured so many hardships.
How about Detroit or Phoenix?
Fuck Detroit. They've won a bunch of cups. Like, Buffalo's never won anything. But seriously, though, like, who cares?
Oh, are we talking deserving of winning a cup because of the way that the city's constructed?
Yeah, just, like, all the hardships and stuff that they've gone, like, endured. Not just as a city that's shitty.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, as sports franchises and... They're perennial losers, man.
Tough shit. That's great. They can have the consolation prize. I'll even make one up and mail it to them. Here's your trophy for being the most deserving team to never actually win anything. So how does that work?
At least they're recognized.
Yeah. Is that all they want?
Who cares?
Not me.
Not me either. Ottawa does play Buffalo tomorrow night. Big game. Buffalo's two games in hand. They're 7 points ahead of Ottawa.
Ooh, playoff implications.
It's a big game.
It's catchphrase time.
Time to galvanize the team.
4-point game.
4-point game. That's a good one.
Yeah, I love those. We got 2 4-point games coming up against them.
Yeah, April 10th is the other one. I think that's the night that they celebrate Alfie's 1,000th game.
Yep, that's the one.
So it'd be interesting to see if they could cut it close towards that game.
I think that they, I think realistically they could make it close. They have an easy schedule, easier schedule coming up.
Last time we talked about how soft their schedule was, they immediately went into the tank.
Yeah, we can never be too careful with that. but I think they'll get close, but ultimately we're going to end up
playing. We're not taking responsibility for that, though.
No. So I think fifth is probably quite reasonable here. I don't think sixth is going to happen.
Well, they have to win tomorrow night. To have any kind of chance, they have to win tomorrow night.
Yeah. So after that, we'll have a much clearer picture. And we can all go back to scouring the standings every day and playing out our what-ifs and how-comes.
At least it'd be a good storyline down the stretch if they could put together a winning streak.
Oh, could you imagine if it came down to the last game of the season against Buffalo at home, Alfie's night? You know, Alfie had that great quote in The Citizen today about whether or not he was inside Ryan Miller's head. And he said, you know, I've never been to Ryan Miller's house, so how can I be in his kitchen?
That would be a surreal night, though. It almost reminded me of the first year Ottawa made the playoffs when they clinched against Buffalo.
Yep.
And Duchesne scored against Hasek with like 2 minutes left.
It would be huge.
All right. So say Ottawa is in a scenario where they're 1 point back of Buffalo, last game of the season, Alfie's 1,000th game. Ottawa wins. Is that more significant than their first win against Buffalo or that catapulted them into their first playoff?
No, I don't think so. I don't think many Sens fans would agree with that.
What about the win now mentality?
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
But the first time, it's so important, right? I mean,
everybody remembers their first.
It didn't last very long. I can't make that joke. That's terrible.
Fuck off.
That's what they expect.
That's what they expect. Don't be irreverent.
But I don't think it could be. It would be a big game. It would be important, you know, Alfie's house. And, you know, of course, destroying the Sabres always feels so good. I love it. And I'm not sure any fan base in the NHL is more obsessed with the Senators than the Sabres fan base.
Don Brennan was alluding to that in the Off the Post blog. He was talking about how much Ottawa is in the heads of the Buffalo fans, especially Daniel Alfredson.
And Tim Baines mentioned as well in that roundtable that both Brennan and Gariotch had gotten in the heads of the Buffalo fans and had all had, you know, incidents before with them and maybe stepping on their toes a little bit.
And I think he used the same VCR joke for about the 13th time in the last
I think we should get a pool going here to buy that man a friggin' DVD or a book on...
That could be a funny raise money to buy Tim Baines a DVD player. Could be good.
So that's who watches TV Tropolis.
You know, good stuff. Good stuff.
So as we discussed being inside the heads of either the Sabres, their fans, their announcers, whatever, why don't we go talk to Ken Warren, who's actually in Buffalo right now, getting ready for the big 4-point game tomorrow night, and he can talk to us about his column today, which was actually quite important, I think, for all Senators fans to read and understand the motivations behind the way that Brian Murray has constructed this team and what it's going to mean for the Senators down the road.
Sure, let's call him.
Joining us on the line right now is Ottawa Citizen sports writer Ken Warren. Ken, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Not too bad, thanks.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Good day today. How's Buffalo? What's the vibe like in the city right now, considering the game tomorrow night?
Well, obviously Buffalo's in a pretty good position. They've had a very good season. They had a little slump there, I think, going into the Olympics, but they've come out of it. And let's face it, things could change here going down the last couple of weeks, but they have a pretty good lock on top spot in the Northeast and, you know, at a minimum third overall in the Eastern Conference. So they're in a comfortable position to have home ice. And I think for them anyway, it's kind of now a waiting game for the playoffs to start.
Now, it's been suggested before that the Ottawa Senators have somehow gotten inside the heads of the Buffalo Sabres. Are you noticing any type of climate there that would suggest that this is true, either from the players or from call-in radio, whatever it may be?
Well, not so much. I mean, it's funny how these things work out. It's certain teams sometimes have other teams' numbers for whatever reason. I mean, you look at Boston Bruins and Tim Thomas over the Senators this year, until this year when the Senators finally got to him. I think it was 10 or 11 games that Thomas had won against them. And, you know, you can put a number of things on it and say it's a goaltending, but sometimes streaks just happen. And in this case, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you consider, you know, how good of a goaltender Ryan Miller is for one team to have had such a good number on him. And a couple games, obviously, Patrick Alleen played in there. But for the Senators to have won 8 straight over Buffalo, there's a little bit of good fortune or lucky bounces in there, I think, to suggest that could happen.
You just mentioned good streaks. Ottawa just has a 2-game winning streak. It's a modest 2-game winning streak. Have we seen the light at the end of the tunnel? Or
I think it's too early to say that. I mean, it just like the team's on a 5-game losing streak and the sky is falling and, you know, all the defensive break, everything seemed to go wrong in that winning streak, in that losing streak, and you're looking at it and you're saying, wow, is this team ever going to win a game again? And now you look at it and you say, you know, they've played a couple of pretty solid games. I mean, everything seemed to be, you know, there was some of the breakdowns and some mistakes, but when there were, the goaltending was good. And that's more of, I think, what we expected to see or saw from the Senators going into the Olympic break. But I don't think... we have a tendency in this business to get too excited about one game or two games or three games even when you have to measure it over a longer period of time. And I maybe there's a lesson in this for all of us not to get too excited about one result or two results.
I know, that's a good point. In your article this morning, you prefaced kind of Ottawa's problems right now by addressing Brian Murray's philosophical approach to building his team through like tougher, stronger, more physical players on the blue line. There's no question that he's addressed this with the blue line. But do you kind of believe that this old-school mentality could have success for this team in the playoffs this year?
Yeah, it's so tricky right now because you've got this sort of, you know, the stuff that's in the air regarding all of the hits and the fine line on the hits and whether they're dirty or clean and whether they're going to be called by the officials. And obviously there's less stomach from fans anyway for borderline hits, and you bring in a player like Andy Sutton who's, you know, he's a borderline hitter, and let's face it. So you have a guy that if the referees aren't calling penalties that are, you know, let's, you know, where you could call it, one official might call it, another guy might not, that make, you know, be a big factor in how the Senators play and whether they're allowed to stay out of the penalty box. Because there's no question that Sutton's game intimidates players on the opposition. And if he's not getting penalties, it's a big factor and it's a big advantage for the Senators.
Do you think that there is enough balance on the blue line? And do you think that if not, there's a lot of pressure on guys like Erik Karlsson and Filip Kuba to really elevate their play and carry the blue line's offensive weight?
That's a great question. It's far from a perfect defense, but you look around the league and in the Eastern Conference specifically, and you say who has a perfect defense? I think, in my mind, I'm not sure Erik Karlsson's ready for the role they've put him in. He's 19 years old, and he's just so up and down. I mean, he's spectacular at times, but he's also a liability at times in his own end. And then you look at, Karkner is essentially an NHL rookie. He's not classified as a rookie because of his age, but he's a first-year NHL player. He's never been through an NHL playoff. You got Sutton, who has played four games in the playoffs in his career. So you look at that sort of stuff and you go, well, yeah, there are a lot of question marks about that defense. The balance is interesting because, you know, as we pointed out, they have a little bit of physical stuff going on in each pairing and a little bit of offense in each pairing. So I think there's a recipe for success there, but also there are some doubts that have to creep in too.
Sorry, I definitely should have included Chris Campoli in that discussion as well. He had a fantastic game against Philly. Just wanted to make sure.
You know what?
I
think he's played very, very well and sort of under the radar since he's come back from his injury, because everybody's obviously talking about Carlson because he's the young guy and he's the first round pick from last year. But Campoli is very quietly being solid, and not just offensively, but he's taking care of, you know, the play in his own end.
Looking at this team now, I don't think you can argue that Brian Murray's put a stamp on it. This is his team. Knowing that, what kind of expectations should we have for this club going forward in the playoffs?
Well, and expectations are funny things, right? If we go back to going into the season, them coming off their terrible season last year, where everything went wrong, including the Murray's decision to hire Hartsburg and really bring in a no-name in Corey Close. Nobody knew really what to expect from him when he came in. It's really funny looking back, because you go into the season and you said, you know what, if Pascal Leclaire is the goalie everybody expects him to be, this team should challenge for a playoff spot, and, you know, anything more might be a little bit too much to hope for. Now you look at it and you go, well, Pascal Leclaire, I mean, it's just been an atrocious year for him, injury-wise and play-wise. And you look at it, they had their 11-game winning streak. And now, when they had that streak, everybody's saying, wow, they have a chance to maybe get through the first round or second round, and if things fall into place, maybe they have a chance for a really long run. Then they go into their slide, lose five in a row, and start fighting for a playoff spot, and everybody's back down again. Expectations, it's really hard to think. I guess you can look at it and say the Eastern Conference, other than Washington and Pittsburgh in my mind, and maybe New Jersey, is wide open. So any one of those teams below them has a shot to win a round and possibly two, and then who knows, right?
If Ottawa, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but if Ottawa flames out, whether it's towards the end of the regular season or in the first round of the playoffs, how devastating is that for the franchise? And at what point would you hold management accountable?
See, there you go. Like, it's funny. Let's put it, answer your question backwards, kind of. If you looked at it and said, okay, let's say they're in the position of Atlanta or Boston, and they're fighting right down to the wire just to get into the playoffs, and they squeak in and get in seventh spot or eighth spot, and they end up playing Washington or Pittsburgh or New Jersey or whoever in the first round, and then lose, and everybody'd say, well, yeah, they could run at it, and they made the playoffs, but they played Washington, and I think that might be the reality of it if you go back to how bad last year was. And now you turn it around and you say, because they had that run of 11 games, they go in and people's expectations are raised. I don't know how devastating it is. And I say that because I don't think much was expected of them going into the year. Things changed during the year, and maybe they realized that they could compete, or media-wise anyway, we realized they could compete a little bit better than maybe we thought they could, especially when Leclaire didn't have a good year. And a lot of funny things happened during the year that were surprising.
No kidding. Like, Tim and I have talked about that before, too. We think, like, they'll probably end up going status quo, but we wonder if, like,
if they flame out, would Brian Murray consider finally changing the core? Because the core of the team hasn't really changed that much since the Stanley Cup season.
Well, I mean, you can nitpick and say there's some terrible decisions. I mean, I think Alex Kovel has a terrible decision.
Amen.
he's performed the way his track record has suggested he would perform. He's fantastic and for stretches, and then he's invisible for stretches. And that's exactly what his resume would have, you know, suggested. So I just didn't understand that signing, and I still don't. So that decision, you know, that's an outsider coming in. Always, obviously, at this point in the year, people are going to look at the trade acquisitions and say, have they been good? Well, obviously, that one is going to be, how we measure that's going to be based on their playoff success. If they get through a round and if Sutton has a big impact on, and Cullen can score his share of points, then those trades are probably, in Murray's favor. But the core, I mean, Alfredson's not going anywhere. Fisher's contract probably means he's not going anywhere. The Volchenkov decision is a huge one. Let's face it, that's probably the biggest decision coming forward. But I don't know how much else they can do, especially with other teams and their salary cap situation. So I think you might not have much choice but to keep what you have regardless of what happens.
All right, Ken. So usually at the end of our interviews, we do a little quick hit segment. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
All right, great. My first question for you. It's not a game night in Buffalo tonight. What's the best thing to do in Buffalo to keep busy and, I guess, safe?
Wings at the Anchor Bar.
On Hockey Central today, Tim Murray described Pascal Leclerc's play as very, very bad. It's been a bad situation this year. How would you describe, using an adjective, how would you describe Pascal Leclerc's season?
Wonky.
That's a good answer. Anton Volchenkov is a UFA at the end of the season. If you have to throw a dollar figure out that you would walk away from, what would it be?
$5 million a year. Sorry, $4.5 million a year.
There you go.
Yes.
Best playoff opponent for the Senators?
Buffalo.
Last week, Eugene Melnyk sold over $9 million in shares in BioVail. What's the last thing that you've sold?
I'm sorry, I missed the question. Can you try that again?
Yeah, sure. I was just saying, last week, Eugene Melnyk sold over $9 million worth of shares in BioVail. What's the last thing that you sold?
hockey cards.
Nice. Well, Ken, thanks for coming on the program. We appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, that went great.
Yeah, I think he was happy to talk to us.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think that toughness can prevail in the playoffs, or do you think that the finesse game is going to win? Actually, forget that. Who'd win in the game? Broad Street Bullies or high-flying Edmonton Oilers of the 80s?
Oilers.
There you go.
Definitely.
I think that answers a lot of questions right there.
Too many Hall of Famers, man. Too many Hall of Famers. But now it's interesting. The Brian Murray, getting physical right now, I can understand that plays into the hands of, a team like Philadelphia or Boston where you match up very well. It's going to be interesting because even if they advance around, inevitably you're going to have to play a good, quick, speed team, right? So it's just...
Well, let's talk about the intimidation factor, right? In playing that kind of game.
Do you think Washington's going to be intimidated by playing Ottawa?
No, I don't think so. But I certainly think over a 7-game series, you can really wear a team down. And let's be honest, we're not going to be playing Washington first round, right? It'd probably be a little bit further on down the road, cross our fingers.
Well, that's the good news about finishing towards the middle of the pack. You don't really have to worry. Like, say there is one upset, right? You don't have to worry about playing a top seed.
Yep.
If you advance past one round until the very end.
No, very true.
Which is the way it should be.
But I could see a physical element really deterring them. The same way you'd watched, you know, obviously Team Canada's a much, much, much different situation against in the Olympics against Russia.
Right.
But you can see the way that a guy like Ovechkin can get buried in a game like that. Or on the flip side, you could see him really use that to his advantage and
well, that's the problem, though.
Annihilate a slow defense.
You're comparing like one game to a 7-game series, right?
But Volchenkov's had incredible success against Ovechkin in his career, right? Remember when all that...
it's like a good news, bad news thing, because, you know,
yeah.
If Volchenkov has a great playoffs, Ottawa's going to pay for it on the bottom line.
Yeah, and thinking back about it, when we first started hearing all these ridiculous figures about what kind of money Volchenkov was looking for, you know, had turned down, etc., it all came after that game when he shot Ovechkin down completely, last meeting against the Caps.
No, that's a good point. And because he would see, I don't know, he was like snapped in some pictures.
Yep.
Talking to, who was it? I think it was Ovechkin and Salmon.
Yep.
A big conspiracy theory that... it's almost like the Beijing Pact,
yeah,
from the Team USA basketball program, where like Chris Bosh and LeBron and Dwayne Wade were supposed to go to the Knicks and play there next year. That's just conspiracy theories abound. People love that stuff. They just eat it up.
Of course. You got to involve some sort of money in the Olympics, right? Some sort of money discussion has to come about.
He was talking to Ovechkin. He's going to Washington, man.
I actually saw Volchenkov on the bench with Russia talking to the trainer. Maybe or maybe not the same trainer that Ray Emery got into an altercation with. But that led me to believe that he definitely has an injury. Playing with a bad back.
What a week. Not much happened aside from these two games.
Yeah, it's been kind of slow moving.
We're kind of in the middle, right? You're not too high, but you're not too low. You're kind of like apprehensive about where this team could go in the next few days.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern right now is the future. Like, I know what's happened has happened. It's been interesting, but what's really going to define this season, ultimately, are these last few games here. Not that every other game they've played hasn't mattered, but this is going to be big.
I'd like to ask you the same question that I asked Ken Warren. Like, if this team flames out in the playoffs, how do you feel?
I'd have to see the manner in which they flame out, so then I can start talking about acquiring another puck-moving defenseman and, you know, maybe some more speed or some more youth up front. But I think it's going to depend on what happens going forward in the playoffs. I think it's far too early to start calling for Murray's head. I think a better suggestion at this point would be to start questioning how effective the core is. Not how effective it was or could be, but what it does on a game-in, game-out basis for the past 3 years, right? And I think that's a better starting point than chopping off Murray's head. And he just signed the extension. He's not going anywhere, right? Let's be honest. He's there. And as long as he's there, Corey Kluston's going to be there. Those two are a perfect pair. Murray gives them the players, and Corey Kluston just runs them like clockwork.
Yeah, but you talk about like moving the core, and
not the whole core.
No, but there's such a loyalty to the core. Like, for a city that's never won anything, like Daniel Alfredson's an institution. You can't get rid of a guy like that. But it's just weird how it's like it doesn't matter who it is. A player comes up upon, you know, free agency, and everyone's kind of like, you got to retain him. Doesn't matter the cost, you know?
But yeah.
Even guys like Chris Kelly, ultimately, like, the most replaceable guys you have to retain. It's just a weird, like, Chris Neal.
Nick Foligno?
Well,
he hasn't come to that yet, but it will, right? And you'll hear the same stuff about how all this loyalty, good Ottawa Senator boy, we're familiar with them, we want to keep them.
But, like, you were talking about how the personnel, you know, it's up to the core. At some point, you have to, like, place the blame at the players, right? Because Corey Kluson's probably got as much as he could, considering what's happened this year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the number of injuries, Pascal Leclerc's play.
Yeah, he's milked just, that cow.
Yeah. You know. But it's like at some point the blame's got to be placed on the players. But Brian Murray's the guy who signed them all the long term deals.
Yep, that's.
I don't even think you could flip half the guys right now for like a good package.
That's absolutely true. I hate to look back and play what if history there.
I don't want to go down that road because it's kind of negative anyways. But
yeah,
like the team's good.
Of course, you're right.
They're middle of the pack, but like Although I don't know, it's just can this team get better? Like obviously they have some blue line guys coming up the pipeline, but in terms of the forward assets, they don't really have guys who can step in and help them.
No, there's really not a whole lot.
I think like expecting guys like Silverberg and Pettersson to come over right away and like start producing as soon as they get here is kind of naive.
And you started everyone on that Wick bandwagon now too.
Oh, sorry, man.
Way to go, Graham.
Well, who knows what he could contribute? If he has like a season like Peter Regan, fuck, I'd rather have that than Ryan Shannon.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I think I'd rather have...
And he's cheap, right? He's a young, cheap. That's what you need. To compete in the salary cap area, you have to have inexpensive pieces who can contribute. And I think Wick could be like one of those guys.
And
but it's way too, like you said, it's way too early and it's way too premature.
I'll take that to the next level, Graham. And I'm going to say that you got to have guys who are cheap, effective, and also disposable, right? Because that way you can pitch them when they get too expensive and recycle them, right? Which is, in my mind, the biggest key to succeeding in the cap world is understanding what you can get for your buck and disregarding everything else. Like, sorry, if you're a single guy living in a place that's costing you, you know, like $300,000 a year in property taxes or something, it's unreasonable. I mean, you may like it, but you don't need it, right? You can move to somewhere else that's going to be more in your price range and still have the same creature comforts and everything else. That's all I have to put about that. I just think that these guys have to be turned over more than they are, and it's just something we're going to have to get used to. The core can stay, that's fine, but the other pieces, be prepared to part with them.
But I don't want to get it. I really don't want to turn this into a debate, whether it's like the core of the like peripheral players, because Ottawa's been switching the peripheral players on an annual basis, and they haven't really progressed as a franchise. In fact, they've gotten worse.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
So I know what you're saying, and like guys like Fisher, Alfredson, Spezza, like, yeah, I don't see them trading them either, but...
You know, here's looking at guys like Ryan Shannon.
In retrospect, you see guys like Mike Fisher and Spezza. They're making too much money for what they do.
Yeah, but you got people in Ottawa who would love to keep Ryan Shannon, Nick Foligno, all these guys long-term, you know, people who absolutely love Sean Donovan, etc. You know, these are the pieces you can part with if they get unrealistic expectations for cash, right?
Sure. Sure. It's always the same. It's the same five fucking
guys. Yeah, but the peripheral guys grow into the core of the team, right? That's the problem.
Yeah, but when the core is sucking up so much of your cap dollars that you can't replace these players, like you can't sign players to augment the core, and your younger players get better, hopefully, and you have to pay them more money, where's the money coming from?
Yeah, you run out of it eventually, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm talking about is guys like, you know, guys who come up who are drafted or whatever, and all of a sudden, because they play for the Senators, they're part of a core team, or they're part of the core, and it's essential to keep them. Like, I'm sure that you've talked to people out there on the street, they would tell you
I never talk to people on the street.
Yeah, it's probably for the best, especially not in your neighborhood. First of all, I'd like to take the time to thank Ken Warren for coming on the show this week, and I'd like to thank the creditors from CanWest for paying his roaming bills on his cell phone. Buffalo Sabres tomorrow night, Florida Panthers on Saturday evening. Wish you all the best. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the hockey. It doesn't get any better than this for now.